Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, Answers for Healing and Infinite Love, which shares an in-depth view of the universal laws of energy, healing, spiritual communication, and offers ways to harness this energy, awaken your intuition, and discover your amazing personal power to manifest a really good life. I am delighted today to welcome Peggy Burdick, the financial whisperer, author of It's Never About the Money, Even When It Is, who will show us how to untangle our emotions from our money and recognize possible unconscious habits of behavior which do not allow us to utilize money or other resources or other areas of life in the most beneficial way. Hello, Peggy, and thank you for joining us today.
Listen, thank you so much for inviting me. You have such an impressive roster of people you've interviewed. I'm flattered to join them.
Oh, thank you so much. Peggy, as listeners of Healing From Within are aware, my guests and I explore past experiences and belief systems in order to learn more about ourselves, the human condition, and the universe, and understand how these influence our everyday life, so we can begin to assume responsibility for any necessary changes in our patterns and behaviors and begin to realize that we do have an innate inner sense of awareness that can help us develop new perceptions, manifest greater health, prosperity, and good relationships while moving past those obstacles that impinge on our well-being. In today's episode, Peggy Burdick, who founded Home Loans for Women, a mortgage company specializing in helping women in bankruptcy reclaim their homes, shows us how to learn more about our finances, our relationships, health, and about our children. Peggy will show us how our lives are on two tracks and how to recognize what part of yourself is directing your decisions at various times in life. Peggy, I often ask my guests to think back to childhood and remember a person, event, or feeling that may have been the precursor to the values, work, lifestyle that you value now as an adult. For I personally feel we all come into this life with a plan and destiny that guides us to develop our inner and our outer world reality. So think back for a minute.
That's not a question that I can answer easily, because what I have found, unless someone has, you know, extenuating circumstances where there's a tragedy, for the most part, and I think I'm pretty vanilla, it's not so much a defining moment scenario as much as it is the consistency of a message. It gets played over and over again so that the child then absorbs it and thinks it to be true. It's like a lie. After a while, everyone believes it, and meanwhile, it's fabricated. So if I look at my life...
Would you think that it was your relationship perhaps with your mother that may have predetermined some of these patterns or ideas that you as a child and all of us as children internalize as a result of, yes, hearing it over and over again and being programmed, so to put it? Yeah.
Well, you're partially right, because there are two forces that come into a child's life that are life-changing. A, it's the relationship between the child and the mother, and B, it's siblings, where you are placed in order, in birth order. So what happens with children that are born second down or third down, as I was, they tend to be influenced by their older siblings, more often than their own parents. That's A. And B, what I have found in every single client that has come to me, they had a damaged relationship with their mother, because the trust, which is the key word for everybody, the trust gets tainted early on, and it just gets broader and wider and bigger as a child goes forward. And it's only through healing, and as you said earlier in our conversation, it's conscious living, the kinds of choices we make, that we can close the gap of trust, learn to trust ourselves and the outside world. But again, that's partly what you're doing, is making people aware of what it is and how it unfolds and what they can do about it.
Absolutely, that is what we hope to do. So, why did you write It's Never About the Money, even when it is, even though your book has a great deal of information about understanding our personal development and how to improve everything in our life?
Because that is the nut of it all. It has nothing to do with money. People come to me with money issues, and it's like, well, it's not about the money. Money is collateral damage, just like weight, drinking too much, any sort of drugs. So if I narrow it down to go underneath the collateral damage, what is it really coming from? It comes from a damaged sense of a damaged sense of self. It comes from, it then plays out in being confused, and as you said earlier, the two tracks, which I will explain. But that's what happens to people, is they end up being split in who they are authentically and who they've learned to adapt to in order to survive, because survival is the number one drive in any species.
Yes,
Without
that's
the hide,
yeah.
right, without the hide who I am authentically, in order to get my needs met, to get a bowl of cereal, you know what? I will become a different person to get a bowl of cereal. The problem is that when you are of an age and you're older and you can survive on your own, that emotional concrete was poured by the time you were 5. You need a jackhammer to break it up. So when you look at money today as collateral damage with some people, we just have to track it back to the messages they got and how they split off as children. And we can bring it back together now. We can heal it so the two tracks become one. But
Yeah,
only, as you
so,
said, right,
yeah.
if someone's willing to do the work, that happens.
Right, Peggy. So what happened was the children developed certain fears and limitations and thoughts
Right.
that became realities when in fact they were embedded patterns or behaviors. And you wrote this. It is actually simple. Life is simple if we let it be. I wish to share with those who are struggling key words that could help them feel more in control when they were experiencing anything but control. If we slow ourselves down, breathe, use simple, accurate words to express our deepest feelings, we automatically gain control of ourselves, not others, but only ourselves. And that's a very important concept, that we can make the changes necessary for our own development and happiness and accept others the way they are until they find their own way. So what are the real issues most people struggle with that affect all aspects of their thinking and decision-making processes? What are they really struggling with?
I think they're struggling with having this profound message their whole life of being unworthy, of being unworthy of being loved, which is the most simple and basic thing, and that then catapults or dominoes out to other things in their lives. So that person may be someone who changes jobs often. That may be a person who constantly is doing self-sabotaging. You hear stories of women saying, "Oh, I keep marrying the same guy, the same kind of guy over and over again." Or, you find men saying, I just can't break out of this repetition that I have. I just can't move ahead of it." So I think it shows up in really people freezing because they are afraid to show who they are authentically, because that in their life, when they were authentic, literally coming out of the womb, they were rejected. Okay, that's a lot, that's a life experience coming out of the womb. But then if the mother doesn't create a bond and a bridge with that newborn child, then the child is struggling and will continue to struggle because the child's depending upon the mother's availability to feel safe. What do kids want? They want warmth, closeness, and acceptance. My father is 99. He wants the same thing. It never changes in our lives. We all want acceptance.
No,
We
yeah.
all want to feel close,
Yeah,
right?
we all want to
So it's
love and be loved, and we really don't want to have this anger that comes from fear and shame and guilt that has been imprinted. We all just have this desire to be our authentic self. And with that
Right.
said, we can go to when you write that when our needs do not get properly met as young children, we create a
Right.
survival system or these Life on Two Tracks. Can you tell us about Life on Two Tracks?
Well, I kind of touched on it a few minutes ago with being authentic and having adapted persona in order to survive. So what happens to people is the older they get and the less they get in touch with that dichotomy, it catches up with them. When you and I were growing up, people talked about, midlife crisis and all this kind of stuff. But, what is it really about? It's about people being detached. It's about people not getting their basic needs met. There are people are cranky. I'm sure you've noticed that. People are cranky on Starbucks, at the gas station.
Oh, these days it's out of control right now.
They can't get their needs met. Mm-hmm. And the needs are really basic. So when people are living in these two different worlds, as I was living, I often, and this is, 25 years ago when I was in therapy, I'd often say to my therapist, whose life is this anyway? Remember that Broadway show? Whose life is am I living? This is not me. But that was evident that I was, in fact, living an adapted life. I wasn't living the life that I felt. Your feelings are your identity. If those feelings get hijacked early on, as is most people, it's a lifetime of struggle to find them, to get them back. There's nothing wrong with your feelings. What becomes, quote, wrong is how you administer your behavior.
Right.
What difference how you feel?
Do you know?
You deal with it or something else.
You know, Peggy, I think this is for everyone. We're all experiencing this throughout our life, and at some point we wake up, perhaps we call it a midlife crisis, or perhaps we call it something else, but we wake up and we say to ourselves, well, is this all there is? Because because every song talks about finding, going deep within yourself to find your authentic self, to find your soul, to find your reason, your reason for being alive. And and I believe almost everybody on the planet will in some form ask these questions and have this awakening process. Whether they are aware that they're having it or not doesn't really matter. It is a form of personal and spiritual growth. And it's happening more and more now, so that's why we're seeing people unhappy or not satisfied with with life as it is, because life can be so much more. So tell us about the emptiness that some people may feel in the pit of their stomach and why they're feeling this, and what it because it's related to what we're talking about here. Emptiness or a lack of a self-awareness or a journey that is looking for a destination or goal that is not really what we're looking for. So tell us about the emptiness.
I think the emptiness really comes from feeling disconnected, and the basic, it certainly shows up in feeling disconnected from yourself, so that by people are constantly, they have negative voices in their head, but it's also being disconnected from another person, which is partly why some people, they can have dogs and cats, they can be incredibly attached to their animals because it's safe. But to be vulnerable and to be able to allow someone to see them who they are authentically, to be able to get to allow someone to be close to you is scary. So most people shut down. They shut it out. They divert their energy into other things, but it never changes. Every morning, your life is like a slate board. During the night, it gets all cleaned with those rubbers, those erasers. You wake up the next morning, the board is empty. You got to start all over again getting your needs met. So unless you have the tools to do that, all people do is feel more despair. They feel hopeless. They feel disconnected. They drink more. They're unhappy, and you're entitled to be happy. That goes back to feeling unworthy. You don't feel worthy of being loved.
Well, I think our divine right is to be happy, to be healthy, to live a fulfilled life. And it is the incidents or traumas or people or experiences that often take us away from that
Exactly.
knowingness. And when we start to question again, we come back to that knowingness, and then we have the tools, as you say, to be able to create it in this mature and dignified, a loving way. So you at the end of the book, you mentioned different ways for parents to help their children. Actually, I think you give five very wonderful ways for parents to begin to help their children, so perhaps it won't be so hard for them as they're growing up to get to this point of being their authentic self and feeling comfortable and trusting life and their family, parents, and themselves. So what were some of the ways you mentioned?
I wrote a blog, and the blog was basically about, even though you may have had a terrible mother, it doesn't mean that you will be a terrible mother, because it's not too late. Even when your kids are grown out of the house, the key is that in this case, the mother or even the father recognizes what they did wrong. You can't obviously go back and fix it, but you can fix it going forward.
Yes.
So, right, so the key is always to take responsibility, always to be accountable for your behavior, and then to be able to say, but it's changing, so from now on, I'm going to do X. I'm going to listen to you as opposed to constantly interrupt you. I'm going to encourage you to feel and identify your feelings as opposed to telling you that, no, that's not how you feel. But, at the same time, people need tools. People need to understand the difference between feeling, thought, and action. The most important thing, as I said a few minutes ago, was your feelings, because it's your identity. So need to be able to feel something, think about it, and then choose a behavior that's befitting.
Yeah, and some of the behaviors you mentioned, and I like them very much, were to respect your children, be attentive and present, listen, as you said, and set a good example. Children don't do what you say, they do what they see you do. And to be kind.
It's
To be
so
kind
true.
and gentle and to be considerate. Now, if we put those five qualities into our daily life, as human beings and as parents, everybody around us is going to resonate at a much higher level of being comfortable in their own physical world and in a spiritual world. And now let's take a look at depression, which is an overwhelming modern-day malady with so many people on antidepressant medication that to me it seems like an epidemic. So let's take a look at what depression really is. And it goes in tune with some of these thoughts that we're talking about, what happened in programming as children and some of the fears and limitations that we need to overcome and get beyond so we can find that happier state. So tell us a little bit about depression.
Depression is so fascinating because the root of it is anger. The root of it is feeling powerlessness. That
Yes.
is so profound. And when people just cave, I'm working on a project now with someone else where we're tracking the people that have fibromyalgia back to their suppressed and repressed anger. And it's going incredibly well. Because the key for people is your body holds every feeling possible since the moment you were born. The key is for people to get in touch with it, because then they can, A, release the feeling from a cellular level, and B, it gives them control. They can choose differently moving forward. So when I work with people that are depressed, it's really about little, as growth should be, little tiny baby steps, but really getting them to take action. Little tiny steps. It can be as simple as making a commitment, which is the key to healing, of drinking more water, flossing your teeth, or walking every day for 20 minutes. Or, as you see, a lot of the things I talk about really don't directly affect money, but if you feel better, you manage X better. You manage your relationships better, which includes your relationship with money. It helps you with people that you work with. It helps with you feeling better every day.
It helps with your health. It can help overcome addiction, which is a form of depression and anger. You mentioned fibromyalgia, and I knew a few people who had it, and I at the time thought, you know, they gave a new name to a disease. They made a new disease. But really, I saw this one person I'm thinking of, as being helpless and being so saddened by her life of having to take care of so many other people that she really had no way to express herself. I didn't see it so much as anger and depression, but now that you just described that, that's absolutely what it was. So we can help some of these people who are dealing with physical illness, which is coming from their emotional and thought patterns, and to help their bodies release these imprinted impressions, which lead eventually to discomfort and disease. So we've got to do that with that. So the opposite of depression, so what is the opposite of depression then? Because depression is fear-based. So what's the opposite of that? And what we want to strive for and help our children and friends and family start to strive for?
I think the opposite of depression is ease. When someone feels at ease with themselves, with their body, with their where they are literally in that moment, they feel calm. Right? If you could put colors to people of how they're feeling, I know people have done these surveys, whatever. So instead of depression, which would be like dark gray and black, when you're feeling at ease, you're feeling like a light blue, like it's like even. And then as things shift, because I stole this from Homeland Security, as people's energy and mood shift, the color goes from blue to yellow. And then from yellow, it goes to orange. And at red, they're like exploding because the pressure and the rage really picks up. So the catch for people is when they go from the blue to the yellow, as you said again, conscious awareness.
Well, Peggy, I'm an energy Reiki practitioner and master teacher. So those colors represent, blue is the throat chakra, so it represents speaking your truth, meaning saying what you mean and meaning what you say. And the bottom chakras are the red, which is the root, which is establishing yourself physically and in health and well-being and your relationships. And the orange is the sacral chakra, which is right above. And if you're having a joyful life experience, that is going to be vibrant and healthy. But if it's not, and you're looking for greater happiness and better relationships, that's going to be a weak point. And the yellow is the solar plexus, or the area of your spiritual goals and self-esteem and confidence. So when you just described that spectrum of color, what you're actually describing is how we can be comfortable in the physical world. These are the lowest chakras, and they need to be open, and they need to be moving, and we need to release a lot of our emotional thoughts so that we can be vibrant in our life. The word I was thinking of was vitality and the freedom to experience spontaneous feelings, and that would be the opposite of depression. And in my book, The Living Spirit, I address our soulful and unalienable right to happiness, and I wrote, finding true happiness and joy is the natural outcome of self-investigation. There are no shortcuts. No one can make you happy or unhappy unless you give him or her the power to do that by surrendering or giving your own power away. And it, of course, may seem easier to become a victim and align yourself with other unhappy people. But the truth is, this is a cop-out. Most people just simply want to be loved and accepted by a group. And it is not only by our own efforts and choices that each of us can develop a sense of accomplishment and self-growth, but by recognizing the greater whole of our being and the role we play in creating everything in our lives. So, Peggy, we can see how important it is to look back at our childhood patterns and family structure, as we've been talking about today, to move past blame and limitation to a more authentic and loving way to exist in the here and now without blame, judgment, fear, anger, loneliness, shame, and isolation. So everything you said in your book is so. Everything you said in your book is so. It is all those things from the beginning of a person's life that influence how they will or will not find happiness. And everybody is entitled to that. Is that not so?
So it even says it in the Constitution. Thanks for the color saying. I didn't know that.
Oh, good. That's when I read it.
I think it's from Homeland Security. I said, God, this is like really.
No,
really
but when I when I read it, I saw the chakras and I saw how our physical life was being disrupted, going from one state to another to danger, from comfort to danger. So that was great. Now, what do you want people to take away with them after reading your book? What would you like them
remember? First of all, when they get the book, whether they get it on Amazon or get the e-book or whatever, they need to approach it understanding that it's a tool. Tools equal power. And this is the tool of vocabulary, because when you can 100% accurately define what the feeling is that gives you, that then gives you power, and then what you do about it then becomes a choice, a conscious choice. So if they go into the book expecting it to get tools to help them, great expectation. They're going to see themselves in the book. Everyone that reads the book says the same thing to me. You know me so well. And what does that say? It's a universal condition.
Well, aren't we all one? Aren't we all connected to each other in the same energy? So, yes, we can see each other.
So many people feel isolated, and they think, as I did, it was only me. And Brené Brown wrote a great book saying exactly that. I thought it was only me. And Susan Piver, in one of her books, wrote, you know what? I realized that being different meant that I belonged. She learned that. So if I look at all those pieces of it, I want people to read the book, obviously take notes and do whatever. Oh, and by the way, everyone gets a 30-minute session with me for free when they buy the book.
Oh, how nice. Lovely.
Well, people deserve it. Because you know what? If people want information, it's available. It's absolute. Everything that you have gone through or someone has gone through, someone's been there before. It's not unique.
Well, that's what you remember I said at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
Each of us is experiencing the same emotions and learning how to flow through them so that we don't have to be stuck in any pattern given to us by any other person makes us free. And this is the tool that you're offering in your book, and I am offering in my books also, and what we're talking about here. So I want to thank you, Peggy, for the financial whisperer, author of It's Never About the Money, Even When It Is, but about how to survive our childhood and help the children of today survive theirs, creating a system that helps us to read signals, understand emotions, and make choices, moving past merely surviving, which is not enough in this world, while learning to thrive with love, prosperity, health, and awareness. For more information, go to thefinancialwhisperer.com and Amazon. In summarizing today's episode of Healing from Within, we have seen that the basic element of trust and love are necessary to overcome any loss of self or confidence or self-esteem that often occurs in childhood and can lead to painful emotions of shame, loneliness, fear, and a damaged view of safety in our everyday world. No one means to harm their children, but as Peggy writes, most parents are emotional train wrecks because they never got a clean start. Their lives were shaped by their parents and their environment and is what fueled their assumptions. The double standards that most people live by, combined with their own survival system, create the nest that their own children ultimately grow up in. Children observe what adults and older siblings do and how they do it. For most, this is a clue as to what is assumed to be acceptable behavior or what is not. But when they tell us not to smoke, curse, or be disrespectful, and yet they do all these things, we get confused over the double standard. Being consistent, saying what you mean, and meaning what you say, teaches a child about trust or becomes a warning not to trust. Peggy and I would hope that as caretakers, parents, educators, and evolved humans hoping for more love, compassion, and cooperation in our families, schools, workplaces, and in the world in general, that we begin to investigate our earlier views of life, the events and patterns that were formed, and begin to rethink, reshape, and encourage a more trusting view of self and of others, so we can live authentically and not fearfully in a survival mode alone. Remember to leave the past in the past, be still, let it be, and live in the present moment with hope and trust, and hope and trust that all is well. And it is. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and invite you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, to read and listen to leaders worldwide express their methodologies and views for self-advancement and improved world conditions. Also go to WebTalkRadio.net and DreamVision7Radio.com. Thank you.